Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Big Brother 22 eviction episode recap. I'm your host, Aaron Armstrong, and I am filling in today for Rob Sesternino, but I am joined by a marvelous panel of expert Big Brotherians. First of which is Mari. How you doing, Mari?
How you doing, Taryn? Thank you for having me at this tail end. I'm glad I can come in here and wrap things up. Well, it's been a wrap for me, but I mean, thank you for letting me come on and talk about it.
There you go. Also with me tonight is Mike Bloom. How you doing, Mike?
Good, Taryn. I'll just let you know I'm a non-practicing Big Brotherian. I received the former Big Brother bar mitzvah, but never... Wait, hold on one second. Sorry, I was sitting on the mic that I used to podcast. Oh, I'm so sorry. I was sitting on my headphones that I also use. Would you believe it? I'm sitting on a tissue box as well, Mike, that I use to wipe my nose. I don't know what's going on. Live TV, right? Truth and love and power and all that jazz.
I don't know. How did you even get on top of all those things?
A lot of experience, my friend. A lot of experience and a very cavernous butt.
Mike comes prepared.
Can I just ask, before we get into this episode, can I just ask, like, what was she saying in that moment? Christmas comes out. She says, I'm sitting on the thing. I talked to the house guest.
Julie is a mess. We've talked about how much of a hot mess she's been this season. Are we surprised?
No.
I think what we have sort of figured out is that Julie Chen just sort of like, she is probably one of the worst improv students I've ever seen, in that she's very much like, she'll yes and, but her yes and will take you into another dimension and a complete non sequitur to the conversation. And so I think she really is letting like stream of consciousness just come out of her this entire season. That's how we get I love that you love God. That's how we get the Thelma and Louise thing. And that's how we get this tonight, where it really, she made a mistake. She sat on the little buzzer that she uses to talk to the house guests. She did that. Proceeded to pick it up and vocalize, I sat on the thing that is what I used to talk with the house guest.
Shinbot has just been malfunctioning all, not summer, but all season.
It really is. It's like, it's off the rails, yes anding, where she would be like, yes and. Did you know that the thing about yes and is that it actually comes from improv, and improv happened when somebody voted somebody out via 5-3 vote. And can you believe that I actually just went on this tangent accidentally and I wasn't supposed to? It's not on my screen. Can you believe it?
Julie.
Well, I mean, we're sort of, I think, bidding adieu to this, because I would imagine, even though next week is a live show, there's going to be so much to do that I can imagine there's going to be less to sort of fill in the blanks there. I think Julie's going to have to like really hold to script for those remaining 2 hours. This might be the last we see of like true blue, unfiltered Big Brother 22 Julie Chen Moonves.
And I'm okay with that. So
I'm just waiting for her. Like, there's going to be some kind of Zoom call on the finale, I imagine. And I'm just like waiting for her to like Jim from The Office give us like a, can you believe it?
Well, to be honest, I'm surprised she didn't do that when Christmas said she could beat anybody in the final two tonight. Like,
she basically did.
I really wanted Julie Chen Moonves to do the get a load of this guy cam from Wayne's World of like, oh my God.
Yeah, I would love that for that. If Julie just constantly had a second camera ready to go during her interviews, where she turns and goes, can you believe this? And the house guest is sitting there like, I can still see.
Yeah, that she's turning directly to a handheld camera off in the corner.
Yeah.
Oh my God. This has been great. This has been great so far. You guys are more entertaining than the episode we just watched.
I don't know. To be fair, this was probably the most, I wouldn't say straightforward episode, but I'd say it's the least nonsense filled episode.
Yeah.
Experience of more. Yes. Like, the only chaff we really got was the one segment where Nicole apparently had a fever dream of her winning Big Brother for the second time, complete with an overlay of her jumping in the confetti.
Visualize it.
Congratulations, Nicole. That means that congratulations, Nicole.
Congratulations.
I thought her programming got stuck for a second. She just kept saying congratulations.
Oh, man.
I feel like Julie could make a lot of money on Cameo by just giving cameos that say, congratulations, X. You have won. Here's some confetti. I don't know what comes after because Nicole never made it that far.
Yeah. I think she could easily, somebody could create a service where, much like when the late Isaac Hayes left South Park, there was that one episode where they cut together all the different clips of her. Someone could very easily take like the Julie Chen clips and like cut together a birthday greeting, you know, like a fake cameo of like, hello, Tyler. Happy birthday. Congratulations.
And nobody would know the difference.
Mike,
nobody would know the difference.
We already got that on an episode. It was after Memphis was trying to shout out Dominique, happy birthday.
That's true.
Somebody spliced
happy birthday,
in.
Happy birthday, Charlie Moonves.
Oh my god.
Oh man. What an episode here tonight. It's the death of Christmas. Nobody saved Christmas this year. The Grinch has won.
Christmas is canceled.
Yes.
And I think this is her first authentic loss in Big Brother, because I still think she believes she won Big Brother 19 because her team won.
Right.
And in this case, like, team committee technically did win, but Christmas was not part of Team Cody, and so therefore she did not technically win this season like she might have 19.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
Man, it's a sad day when I've been waiting for Christmas to get evicted for God knows how long, and I still can't even like muster enough excitement to just like dance on her grave, because it's just like, I wish it was worse. I wish she suffered more. I do not like her. And all I can say is she was what we thought she was. Like, I was one of the main people who said, you know what? I don't care what the All-Stars label is. I don't really care about that definition, and I wanted to see how she would play sans the broken leg, but whew, she did good. I was on this podcast saying that she was playing a great game, and then her HOH week happened and it just tanked, and I've been just waiting for her to go ever since then, and this was good, minus that delusional that was so delusional. Everything she said to Julie was delusional. Well,
Mari, it took 4 nominations to get rid of her.
Oh, yeah. 4 nominations.
So wait, by that logic, could Victoria truly be the best Big Brother player of all time, considering it took her, what, like 6 or 7 nominations to get her out?
This is like 9, right?
Jeez. Victoria.
Yeah, I mean, look, they chipped away at her defenses week after week, and then finally they were able to get her. It's just how it went. It's definitely not because she wasn't a threat.
That's the thing, though, because I agree with you, Mari. I think from a cathartic perspective, you sort of want to see her wither on the vine, which she certainly did this week, I think, from an emotional perspective.
True.
But I think what can be sucky is that, unfortunately, Christmas, as you talked about, has a certain level of delusion to herself. Oof. That, like, when she walks out there, even if she's blindsided, she's going to be like, well, it's because I was so good.
Yeah.
So it's not like she will truly feel like, no, you were never going to win, and nobody yes. had you in your end game plans from the people left, so you were screwed no matter what happened. Mm-hmm. She still wants to walk out there being like, well, you know what? They only got rid of me because I was the best player left, so kudos to them for doing so.
Yeah, she had a good, what she said, she had a good case against all of them?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Julie's like, really? All of them? Like, hold on though, but who? Like, specifically who? Like, really, Cody?
Yeah, it was, I don't know, I would have been so intrigued. I mean, I guess this is another thing for the alternate universe of Big Brother 22 as to what Christmas would do in the final two of her, like, standing up next to Cody, and it's like, you guys don't understand the physical game I played, winning significantly fewer competitions than Cody, the social game I played, making significantly fewer bonds than Cody, the strategic game I did, making significantly fewer moves than Cody. Like, this is why you should vote for me.
Yeah, but no, Mike, remember, she made big moves in this house. She made those big moves.
She took out Bailey.
Yeah, I took out someone who was never gunning for me, who I promised safety to for the vaguest reasons. That is a big move. And I love how she said, I walked out of here clean. And it's, I guess it's because, like, you know how you, like, you get dirty and then you sort of, like, if you don't immediately shower, you like sit around for a while and pretty much the dirt just kind of rolls off to you onto like other things around you. It's sort of like clean by default. I think that sort of is what happened with Christmas of like, well, you got dirty like 2 months ago and you didn't really shower afterwards, but the dirt has kind of just left your body. And so you are cleaner, technically.
Is that how it works? I don't know.
I have to ask Sis about that.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Well, we did learn something about Nicole. At least, you know, some of us knew it already, but I think the show watchers learned something about Nicole, which is that she has spent the most amount of days in the house out of anybody that's ever played the game. More than Paul. Whoa! More than Janelle, buxom and smart, whatever she said.
Yeah, buxom mixed with brains, yeah. A lethal combination.
That would not be a word I would use to describe Nicole.
Well, that was Janelle. Janelle's...
They did this sort of cut to the, like, in case you don't remember Paul, yeah. Friendship... in case you don't remember Janelle, here's the clip from
that makes Yo more six. Sense. I was like, okay, that makes sense. Who's calling Nicole Buxom out in here? Okay, all right, I gotcha. I'm here, everybody. I'm sorry.
Certainly not Janelle. She's so excited. She's made this record, and she also wants to be the first 2-time winner. And she wants to fulfill her final two with Cody that we hear from her in the diary. Mm-hmm. I'm talking again about going to the final two with Cody. But Cody tells us, all right, that's fine. Have your most amount of days. You're not going to be a 2-time winner.
Yeah.
Is it just me? Was this one of the best Nicole episodes from an editing perspective I've seen in some time? Because, I mean, I don't know, between the jury segment and between Christmas's speech, though it was for naught, like... I know, Taryn, when I came onto the roundtable a couple of weeks ago, I'd sort of talked about like, okay, maybe there's a chance that Nicole's winning chances are growing. And again, not to say that it can surpass Cody, but I feel like the editors are now trying to make a push. Maybe they also feel like Enzo is defaulting to third place. So they're like, well, we'll try to make this a 2-horse race at this point. Go Nicole.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been expecting them because the jury segments, like everything has been pointing so much toward a Cody win. They usually try to introduce as much uncertainty as possible, mm-hmm. and they're usually a lot better at it than they are this season. So I've been expecting like a big push for both Enzo and Nicole that but there's a chance that they can win. And still, I feel like most of what we got was like, well, if they cut Cody, then yeah, which is the best that they can do, I think.
And like the Enzo stuff, they've been pushing this message like Enzo's like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this, yo. And they keep pushing like he's the one that would try and do something, but he doesn't do it. And I'm sitting here trying to figure out, is he like, I know the diary room is feeding that to him, but like, is he taking anything away from that? Because every step of the way between like, oh, this is where I could have gotten out Nicole or David, or this is where I could turn, like every step of that, he's been saying it in the diary room, but we know in the feeds that he has never had any intention of making those types of moves. So how is none of this like actually seeping into his actual gameplay? You know what I'm saying?
Well,
like, how is that so stark, that difference?
We did see Enzo make a pretty big move in this episode, which is that he actually cut Christmas while she was still in the house. He said, hey, this is the final three. How does this compare to other final threes, Nicole? And Christmas is like, whoa! So what I'm thinking is that all he needs to do is go to Nicole and say, okay, now this is the final two. How does this compare to your previous final twos? And just like that, he's caught Cody.
Yeah, what do we think about that faux pas? I guess on the scale of like, you know, Jervis counting 1, 2, 3, 4 in Survivor Blood versus Water, or just like, you know, people accidentally, or Joe's telling Dan sketching me out in bed. Was it something that really had an effect on Christmas, do you think? Or was it just like a genuine like floopy dupe mistake that, you know, we see sometimes? Like Cody and Nicole did so much playfulness this past week. Could that have just been shrugged off as like one of those Enzo moments?
It was just a floopy dupe, yo. That's it. Yeah. Come on.
That's what his son's going to be for Halloween, right? A floopy dupe.
Yeah.
Floopy dupe. Yeah. It didn't seem like that big of a deal for me. I think coming from Enzo, he's better at like, oh, my bad, yo, whatever. But Christmas, as we saw, Christmas did like, oh, so he's really not for me. So, I mean, if he was in a different position, it might have been a big thing. But, you know, none of that was going to change any of the outcome that we've been expecting. So.
Yeah, there's not really a reason to be upset here, in my view. Like, it's not like it is Enzo's call. And if he knows from Cody that Cody plans on cutting Christmas, it's not like Enzo is actually making this happen. It's not like she caught Enzo practicing his Final Four veto speech where he evicts Christmas. He was literally just being like, all right, so this is the final three, I guess. What do you think?
Right.
Listen, Chris would be pissed if she saw the CBS website a few days ago. She saw there was just Enzo, Cody, and Nicole up there, that they were also declaring it prematurely.
Well, they heard it from Enzo, straight from Enzo.
Yeah, I mean, this is what happens when you, you know, don't make any moves and go to the end with your big alliance and then get picked off. Like, sorry, I thought Christmas's... I just thought about this. Christmas's push to Cody was great. A few weeks too late, though. Yep. Like, just way too late. You had all that info on Enzo, and you waited until he's HOH and Cody is the has the veto. Like, and
hey, Enzo's been behind your back. Let me take you back a mere near month in this game to talk to you about what he did back then. And it's, you know, I think, unfortunately, it just came out of the fact that, you know, I think she just felt so well insulated at that point. She had Tyler, she had Enzo to a certain extent, she had Memphis, that like she probably didn't feel like she needed to do it. And now that she's in a desperate quarter, she's like, all right, I guess I better pull this out of my pocket. But like you said, ended up getting to a point where Cody's like, well, Enzo's been, you know, pulling some BS, but I also don't know, you know, if he's really going to be able to win the final HOH anyway. So like, I'm totally fine still going to the final three with him.
And it's not like he was sitting on the block next to her. Nicole was next to you. Cody's number one that y'all knew from week four, we're working together. So what is this?
It is weird to me thinking about like the final six. If you had told me at the final six, the final six is Tyler, Christmas, and Memphis, and then you got Cody, Enzo, and Nicole, and you're going to tell me that Tyler, Memphis, and Christmas get shut out of all the competitions. Yeah. Like that's insane.
True. Yeah, that's true. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, though I will also, again, I talked about this last time we were on the round table. I think we can officially put to rest this idea of Christmas Abbott comp beast. I think
exactly.
Yes.
Muscles and lots of tattoos, my friend, do not necessarily equal that you're a shoo-in for the competitions. As was shown, you know, again, despite her insistence, I feel like, you know, Cody said at one point, like, and, you know, Christmas is smoking you in competitions, Enzo. But oftentimes it was sort of the other way around. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, look at the competitions she did win. She didn't buzz in for a single answer in the HOH she won. Tavon and Bailey screwed up in the veto, eliminated themselves again. And then Nicole and Danny threw it to her. So she didn't need to do anything in the veto. And Ian didn't even compete. She won a puzzle veto during the triple eviction. That was like the cleanest, that in the safety suite, you know, the cleanest wins she has. But man, like,
I forgot about that veto. I totally forgot about that veto. When she said I won comps, I was like, comps? The only one I could remember was the HOH that was thrown to her.
Well, I think the important thing, though, I guess if there's something to take from like the Tale of Christmas, there are many things to take from the Tale of Christmas. It's almost like an Aesop's fable in a way. But I think from a competition perspective, it's almost as much as important to be physically stable as it is to be like, for lack of a better term, emotionally unstable. You know, I don't want to necessarily do a deep dive into the psyche of Christmas Abbott, but she was quick to rise and quick to freak out. And I can imagine in intense must-need competitions, when you get in your head, with that type of stuff that can cause you to sputter out a lot quicker than somebody like a Memphis, for example, who just don't give a bleep attitude, will just be like, all right, I'll be nice and calm and get through this hydrant puzzle. I don't give a crap what everybody else is doing, as opposed to Christmas, who like loses the one little dodgeball and then has a freak out about it. I think be as strong as you want to, but if you're not strong up here, it's going to amount to a hill of beans.
Well, Mike, I don't know if you saw this, but she had an entire, 20-minute conversation with Kacer earlier in the season where she explained to him how to win competitions because she had just won the safety suite that week. And she was explaining to him that you need to be able to keep your cool and in the moment just stay calm and be in the zone and not freak out. And that's exactly how she does it. That's exactly how she beasts out in these competitions.
Every time.
And what's that expression? Those that can't do teach. I'm just gonna leave it at that.
Snap.
She does go out swinging, though. Here she is going to campaign to Cody. She offers that she will take him to the final two if she stays, and she tells Julie says, would you really have taken Cody to the final two if you had stayed? She says, most likely.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like, again, to that point, at least in the moment, she seems so charged. Like, I honestly think if for some reason this night had been like the finale night and Christmas had won that final three HOH and she was choosing between Cody and Enzo, she would have chosen Cody. I think she would have made a decision right there that was like, I'm just shooting from my gut. I'm doing this for my family. Enzo, you betray me three too many times. I'm taking Cody to the end. I think there's a non-zero chance she would have made that decision. I could imagine with some more time, maybe Enzo brings her back around with an entire week as an example. But yeah, that was one of many surprising statements from her exit interview.
But Christmas winning the final three would have been like she from on that day's comp yesterday, she was the one who got the most like days actually wrong, like not even the physical portion of that part. She got those days wrong and had to redo them. So there's no way that she was going to have a choice at the final three, even if she made it. I do not like Christmas. I'm sorry.
What's your problem with Christmas? You get gifts, it's fine.
I like the real Christmas, not this
one. Well, I would say if anyone's happy right now, it's the Big Brother production company, because they were able to wring 11 weeks of Christmas music and Christmas puns and Christmas references. That is a return on investment, my friend.
And loved her in the DR.
Yeah.
They did, because she say what you want to. Like, I think when it comes to the scriptedness, like, she does a good job of just like sitting there, being very firm, being very intense, being very straightforward.
Yeah.
I think especially I can imagine if they're like, no, you really have to build up the fact that you're like cold and, merciless. Like, she is much more able to swing into that than I think some of these other people. Like, I don't think Enzo's trying to really come across like that, but Christmas played her part very well in the DR.
Enzo in the diary room is like, all right, yeah, okay. I guess this is what I gotta do, yo. Like, I gotta do what I gotta do. That's it. All right. He doesn't even look at the camera. Like, it's like he's constantly being forced to sit there. They're like, yes. He's like, can I go yet, yo? And they're like, no, Enzo, we need you to talk to us. This is like what your thing. Like, be funny, dude. And he's like, hi. There's a bunch of things you can buy with 10K, yo. That's it. I'd get a bidet.
Yeah,
he was
playing the reruns. Exactly. He's like, oh yeah, all right, let me just plug and play here. Well, Taryn, I know you brought up at a certain point during the season that like you felt that Enzo had run a bit out of steam, either from an entertainment perspective or just from like a mental perspective. I mean, as we reach the pointy end of the game, do you still think that is holding for him to that point about his sort of energy level in the DR?
I think it might be the case, honestly. I think that, he had so much agency earlier on in the game, and he had Tyler and he had, Memphis over here, and he was really like operating and he was ready to like make moves, but he didn't win anything. I think he won a couple of competitions early on, and he was like, this is it. This is my season, yo. And he was like, this is going to be different from last time. And then he just struck out on everything. And he's just been like, it's the same. It's the same all over again. Like, I can't win, yo. And I think it's been very demoralizing on top of, you know, all of the other issues he's gone through.
That, and there's like no pressure for anything, like for him really. Like Enzo, of all people, we've been talking about it, he has been in a good spot since the six. He's one of the few people of that six that really has not had much to worry about ever. So once you take yourself off the gas, once you're like not as like, oh, I'm about to go home, then I think you get sloppy. And I think it affected his performance in the challenges. I think he just wasn't being challenged enough, basically. So it just kind of, you know, that laziness kind of sneaked in on him.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Well, we see that Cody is going to be messing with Nicole a little bit. She's going to give him a campaign, and it's that, hey, I've been with you from the start, and I will take you to the final two, I promise. And he's like, I don't know. This sounded better when it was coming from Christmas. She's like, oh my God, Cody, stop! It's like, and let me say, you could see how nervous Nicole was sitting in that chair as Cody stood up to cast his vote to evict. Nicole was sitting there like, no, don't let it happen again.
I've been visualizing this. I said, congratulations so many times. Well, I think, you know, this is a situation that she hasn't been in before. In Big Brother 18, which is the last time she made the final four, they knew that they were going to evict Corey over her. She was definitely more well entrenched there. And so I could imagine that, like, even that one speckle of doubt that she did not have last time is going to be like a grain of sand that gets in those gears and sort of compromises the system. And I will say that not great on Cody's part to, you know, play with someone who definitely has anxiety issues to be like, maybe I'll keep you, maybe I won't. But also considering how long the days have been, both as a viewer and as a house guest, I also could imagine Cody's just like desire to sort of have fun by effing around with people, especially when he's in a position of power.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we head to the jury house. And we get to hear from the jury. That Devon is rooting for Enzo. This is not super surprising, but I did notice that even as she says, I'm rooting for Enzo, I want him to do well, she makes a note of saying, I know that people think he's played a very lazy game, a very boring game, but I have faith that he will make a move. That he will do, and this ties back to her previous jury segment where she says, I want Enzo to do well, but he's going to need to make some kind of move in order to prove that he's worth, you know, a vote. And so what she tells us is that he's got to make a move. And at this point, we know that the only opportunity to make a move at this point is if he wins the final three HOH and takes out Cody, which, you know, we've been saying all along, that's probably a winning move for whoever does it. And we basically got a lot of confirmation in this jury segment that is basically just where we're at.
Yeah, let's just take that bottle of ketchup from that Big Brother 14 scenario and have it cut Cody, and it probably wins Big Brother also.
This was
only two-time winner of Big Brother is the bottle of ketchup.
Like, this is the most information I feel like we've gleaned from the jury, because not only did we get like the verbal, you know, confirmations on who was rooting for who, you know, wasn't rooting for anybody, but we saw the dynamics in that jury. And whoo, did you see Danny and Kevin? Like, that was so weird to me. Like, that was so weird. I was like, he wasn't being rude to you, girl. What is happening? They don't like each other. Well, and with with Danny being the one who's clearly beating the drum for Cody, I mean, we could have a Paul Raven situation here.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it could be a Paul Raven thing, or like the thing I would think of was like a Bruno Godfrey situation, yeah, from Big Brother Canada 3, where, to be candid, you know, I think they're getting annoyed with each other, and I could understand why people are getting annoyed with Dani if it seems if she is stumping for Cody and being so anti-Nicole as much as we are seeing her 24 hours a day. That has got to get extremely annoying. If just like every conversation you have is Dani trashing Nicole and building up Cody, it gets to a certain point where, and to the point where she's like interrupting other people's points to be like, oh, you mentioned Nicole, let me mention about how she's bad at this game and how she should lose. Then right, you're just like, give it a rest already. So maybe this was like a smaller microcosm of what these jurors have had to go through for the past several weeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. David is like, well, I think it's possible for Nicole to win. Ho, 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 ho. No, 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 no. It is not possible for Nicole. Are you kidding me? What has she done? Why would she win? It's like, well, I was just, if you wanted to, no, I'm not trying to interrupt you. I'm just saying that, like, why would Nicole win the game? Whoa, Dani, why, you let David talk. I'm letting him talk. I'm just saying that Nicole's not going to win. It's like, why are you being so rude, Kevin? David's just like, so anyway,
right.
I mean, I think it's so possible.
That was so rude of Dani. Like, poor David. Like, not even just her interrupting him, but the way she talked to him, the thing that she said to him really was like that feeling of like, why are you even here? Like, why are you speaking? Like, she really had a tone to her voice. And Kevin stepping in I was just like, yo, what is happening? Like, you, something must have happened right before they turned that camera on that we didn't see.
Well, I
because
think
they were on 10.
Well, this is sort of, I think, unfortunately, the costs that come with the benefits of being a Dani Donato / Briones fan. It's like, she can be so like vociferous. And if you hate the person that she's digging into, you're like, yes, we love you, Dani. Get her, Jade. Dig into her.
Get her.
If you like the person, or if you feel like it's too much, then you're like, Dani, my God, you are overly cruel. And I think look at like the past couple weeks, people are like, oh, I love Dani in this jury. Like, she's really stumping for Cody. That's the right person. Go her. And now this episode, you're like, whoa, Dani, a little too heavy on the Nicole hate there. So it just really shows how that scale can tip so easily when it comes to, you know, she's giving the same amount of energy to this pitch. It just depends honestly on who she is sort of pitching it about that changes our view of it.
Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting that they were like, okay, well, Memphis is basically the last hope for opposition to Cody. You know, Memphis, you could argue he was running the game instead of Cody, so, you know, maybe it's Memphis. Oh, look, hey, Memphis. Oh, look at that.
Oh. It is interesting that before that, you know, you made this point, Taryn, that last week, and again, this speaks to the weird sort of seesaw of these jury segments. Last week, Kevin's like, yeah, I gotta admit, Cody's playing a great game. This week, he's like, I've been lighting prayer candles. I sacrificed a goat so Cody would leave this week. He needs to go right now. It's like, oh, okay. So then, all right. So maybe there is still a chance that he doesn't vote for Cody in the end, no matter who he sits against.
Yeah. My read on that was like, if he makes it there, I'm going to have to vote for him. So please let him get voted out before that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. But can somebody just isolate Davon's face when Memphis came around the corner? Like, Davon just like, I mean, it was just like nothing. She had nothing for him. I was just like, whoa, like what? She was just like,
yeah, it was interesting because like Julie's like, shocked reactions across the jury as Memphis walks in. And obviously, like, Kevin was flabbergasted. Tyler was besides himself. David, being a good sport, just gets up and is the first one to give him a hug. And Tay is just like, not going to give you the damn time of day.
Yeah. And she did not move. He had to like awkward hug her. I was like, oh, like, I knew she wasn't like the biggest fan of Memphis when they were in the house, but I feel like something, maybe the talking amongst the other people, but she was really not feeling him when he came around the corner. I really want to know. I really want to know what's going on with that.
Well, I mean, he was the HOH that, you know, put her up and evicted her. So there might be some resentment.
Forgot about that. Yep, that's true.
Well, like yeah. I said, we do get around to that basically, look, if Nicole wants to win, she's going to have to make a move. We heard this from Tyler, too. And this is why, like, while I do see Danny as a potential agitator in the jury that pushes people away from Cody, I see Tyler as sort of like the other end of that, where Tyler is in there like, yeah, but what did Nicole do? Like, why is she just sitting there? We know from Tyler on the feeds, he said, I'm not going to vote for Nicole unless she makes a move. He was not impressed by her HOH, that she decided to put up Memphis and Christmas instead of Cody and Enzo.
Yeah, he flat out said, like, that was not a good idea.
Yep. And he's just like, wow, I'm definitely getting the sense that he's not impressed with her. And then Memphis comes in and he says, so I actually had two alliances called the Wise Guys, one with Christmas, one with Cody. And Enzo told Cody about the other one. And Tyler's like, oh, man. So like Enzo is just blindly loyal to Cody this whole time. He's going to have to do something to prove that's not the case. And it just keeps coming back to this. One of those two has to win that HOH and they have to cut Cody, or it really just feels like they've got no chance here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'll be intrigued to see. Obviously, we know that we are probably going to, and despite the long week we have ahead of us, we're still going to get another rush jury segment in the finale. But I'll be intrigued to hear, like, you know, if this doesn't happen, will the questions to whoever the second place person will be essentially be like, why did you not cut Cody? What did you do besides join up with Cody? I think if Cody wins the final HOH, or this person brings Cody to the end, the questions, much like what happened in BB19, I do feel like are going to be very centric about Cody, either things that he did or things people did that did not involve him that they could use to separate themselves from him in the final vote.
Yeah, from what I got from the jury segment was like you saw a lot of like who I would want to vote for and who I'd begrudgingly vote for. So we got Kevin right now doesn't like Cody, but, you know, we'll probably be forced to vote for him. Tyler seems very anti-Nicole and for Cody right now, doesn't respect what Enzo's doing for what it seems like. Day is clearly for Enzo. I think Day would vote for Enzo over anybody sitting up there. But she does acknowledge that she would like to see him do something. And she seems also very receptive to Nicole, too, winning. Day seems receptive to Nicole winning as well, which is interesting.
She pointed out when she saw that Nicole won HOH and veto, she's like, this is what happened last time.
Yeah.
With Nicole, they didn't win anything until the end, and it was Nicole and Corey. This time it's Nicole and Cody. I mean, and the difference is that Corey got cut. At the final four. So, but yes, I think if I'm looking at a path for Nicole to win, I think she would probably need to have all of Devon, Ian, Kevin, David, and Christmas.
Yeah.
I think she needs all of those votes. And
I think those are definitely the five most likely people to vote for her.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Wow.
I'm seeing Ian talk about how well Cody's doing. I'm seeing Kevin talk about how they need to cut Cody. He's so impressed by Cody. I'm seeing Devon, even though she mentioned, like, she did bring up, like, oh, this is what happened last time. But it wasn't necessarily like a positive thing.
She's also brought up like, well, she's doing that great, but she still needs to make that move. Like you said before, Mari, with Enzo, she still brought in that caveat of, I'm still waiting for one last little thing, though, to really make me feel like I could vote for her. I think it's less about, you know, who would vote for Nicole against Cody, and more so like, if Nicole ends up in the final two, who are the five most likely people to vote for her? Definitely not Memphis. I don't know about Tyler, Danny. I do not think at this point, even if it's Nicole and Enzo, I don't think Danny's voting for Nicole, which is a crazy thing to say, but I think
that's weird.
I cannot imagine Danny sitting there for a month shit talking Nicole's game and then coming around in the end and voting for her. That would be ridiculous to me.
Yeah. So I'm thinking Nicole would basically have to be taken to the final two by Cody for it to come close. I think if she wins that final two and picks Cody, they won't respect that pick, and she might lose. I'm thinking if he would sweep.
I think it's possible.
Yeah. I think she loses by winning and taking him, but she'll have a closer shot possibly if he takes her.
Yeah, because she can at least have that. But I mean, I think the problem is I would be surprised if one of the questions wasn't, okay, if you had won, who would you have taken? And I'd bet a lot of money she'd say, I would have taken Cody. And they're going to be like, all right.
Well, shake off, Julie. I'm ready to put my key in the box.
Yeah.
And so are we just completely writing Enzo off here?
I mean, in terms of making it there, I don't think it's quite as much a given that Nicole beats Enzo in part two of the final three HOH as I think a lot of people are. Especially like what we saw last season was more physical than it was mental. It was very easy questions with a very physical task to get around. And what we saw in the final four veto was that Enzo did know the answers to those questions. He just couldn't get the wheel around. He wasn't skilled enough at the wheel. I think that Nicole is definitely at least on par with Enzo physically, if not even better than him physically at certain things. I think she's probably better than him at like skill tasks in general. But one area that Enzo might have over Nicole is something like a rock wall where he's got massive reach advantage over her.
Which is probably, I would say, most likely going to be the thing. I feel like it's almost always some
it's
sort
always.
Of climb a wall and do something for part two.
Yeah. So
such a shame.
It's definitely possible, I think, here that that Enzo has a chance to win that part two. If he makes it to part three, I'd still give Cody odds to beat him. And, you know, it's certainly possible that Nicole could beat Cody in an endurance competition in part one, but she has said she'd throw it to him. So who knows about that? Overall, I think he's not completely out of this. I do think he's the least likely to win of the three, but probably not. Shouldn't be counted out quite as much as maybe a lot of people are. And he has, much more than Nicole, discussed the option of cutting Cody to the cameras. That this might be his final move that he needs to make in order to win the game. It's definitely something that's on his mind at the very least. I still say that he is more likely to take Cody than not at this point. But I like I said, I don't want to completely eliminate the possibility of Enzo cutting Cody. It's not completely impossible at this point, I think.
Even if he gets to the final two, though, do we think he has a big enough resume to stand? Like,
I think if he cuts Cody, I think.
Okay, so it's literally just dependent on that one move, you think?
Well, because I think you can hinge everything upon that, right? Every story needs its big conclusion. And so I think you could say, like, I did all this. I went under the scenes. You're probably questioning, why did I not vote for Nicole at the triple eviction? Why did I get rid of Memphis? Why did I get rid of Christmas? It's because I wanted to ride the coattails of this guy and cut him when I had the opportunity to do so. And look where I am now. Like, granted, you throw a few more yo's and it is what it is in there. And that's essentially Enzo's speech. But I think that's why it's such a strong point that it could work for either Enzo or Nicole. But that needs to happen, because I will also say Enzo's goodbye messages the past couple times have not been great. In fact, I would argue they've sort of been on the Paul level of just really getting undermined by his competitors for really trying to save face with the other jurors.
Yeah. And I think that's such a big key element of it, is that not only does it complete his story, but it changes his story from what Tyler said. He was just blindly loyal to Cody the whole time. He was just a Cody minion. To no, he knew what he was doing the whole time. He was prepared to cut Cody when the time came. It was just that he knew his best path to the end was this, and then he decided to make the move here. It wasn't that he was just being led by a leash. And you prove that by cutting the person that people might argue led you around on a leash. And his goodbye messages could have been doing work to prove this was not the case. This is what Josh did in season 19, is that he went against Paul in the goodbye messages. He undermined him to kind of try to prove, like, hey, I'm not just a minion. I have my own will in this game. And you know that because I'm willing to badmouth Paul in the jury messages. Enzo has not really done that. Enzo has just been like, yo, you know, I was fighting for you, yo. That's it. I really like you. I feel like Enzo has taken this idea of the jury votes for the person they like. They're mad at the person that played them. And he has just taken it to the extreme. And he's tried to lean so hard into this idea of, like, I have a better relationship with you. You know, I was on your side. I was the one that you had the connection with. You know, don't mind this other dude. He's the one that got you out.
The interesting thing is that it's a tricky needle to thread, and we've seen this all the way back from Yvette in Big Brother 6 of, like, how much goodbye messages can have an effect on people. But to me, there's a fundamental difference between Enzo, who in his goodbye messages saying, like, it's not my fault, to someone like Cody saying, it is my fault and here's why.
Yep.
And that's why I don't know if this is a hot take, I think Cody has been doing a pretty damn good job in his goodbye messages.
Yeah.
Then I would not say Andy Heron is like an all-timer goodbye message, but it's a very similar idea, right? Of like getting out your game in these messages. And granted, it does sound a little arrogant sometimes just because it's coming from Cody, but for him being very matter of fact of like, listen, the reason I had to come for you is, much like, you know, Vanessa always was about rationalizing things, of her saying, well, you know, there's another wise guys alliance. You were in it. I'm with this in this alliance with Nicole and Enzo as well. Like, you provide in very stark terms why you had to get rid of this person, so that the emotional reaction immediately becomes methodical and logical of, okay, I'm pissed off that Cody got rid of me, but now take a look at it from his perspective. It makes a lot of sense. I think it's such an interesting disarming technique that I'm surprised hasn't been used more often, but I think it's also a tricky thing to do depending on the people that you're dealing with.
Yeah, and Cody and Nicole have both been doing it. Nicole did the same thing with, like, the Ian vote out, and, you know, Ian was pissed, and then he said, oh, so she had another side, she had another alliance. That makes sense. Like, they have both learned that if you're in the power position, then you need to explain your moves and you need to be able to, you know, get that across. Meanwhile, Enzo is so worried about keeping that emotional tie, that nice guy tie, that friendship tie, that he's undermining his game. You are basically telling these people that you are impotent in this game. You're saying, I wanted to keep you, but you're sitting out there. That means I couldn't keep you, which means my game is not good. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I feel is coming across. And I forget who made that point on these podcasts, but it was the same thing with Danny and Dick, how Danny would tell everybody, like, oh, I can't control my dad. And then when it came down to the final two of them, they gave him the nod over her. So, it's just very sad that Enzo dropping the ball in his goodbye messages, because half of that jury really want to vote for him, or more than half want to vote for him. They like him enough to want to vote for him, but he has given them nothing to justify giving them the vote.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to do to the jury what he's been doing to the audience all season, which is, hey, yo, I'm doing my best, yo. And they, like us, are going to be like, okay, sure, you've been saying that all season long, but where are the receipts? What have you done? And there's going to be nothing. I'm totally with you, Mike. I think that Cody's goodbye messages are some of the best I've ever seen, in terms of very succinctly summarizing exactly where his game is at in a very flattering light, and flattering the person that he's talking about. It makes him look good. It makes it look like he's, you know, complimenting the person he's talking to. We've seen that Nicole has tried to do something similar, not with nearly as much success, in my opinion. I think I was on this podcast a week ago saying that, based on Cody's goodbye message to Memphis, I felt like Cody was I felt like this is not going to be perceived as Nicole's move. Nicole sees this as, I took out Memphis, but based on the goodbye messages, Memphis is going to go to that jury house and they're going to look at it like, Cody did this. And I feel like that's exactly what we heard from the jury segment tonight, that like, why did Nicole do this? Oh, Cody did this. He knew about the wise guys. That's because Enzo told him. Cody knew. So Cody decided to take out Memphis. And Cody is getting all of the credit for this. And he's explaining it in a way that does, that's like, it's just riding that line of like, this is what I'm doing. I did really, like, from day two, I had three key final twos. Like, you go one step in the wrong direction and that comes off as very arrogant and braggy and like rubbing it in your face. Like, look how well I've played. But I think he's really walked the line well. And I think these goodbye messages have been really well done.
Yeah, Jake DeSilva brings up a great point in the chat that it also seems like Cody, I think, tweaks his tone a bit based on the people he's talking to. Like Tyler, he brings up all the final twos that he had because he knows that that's something that Tyler can appreciate in a game. With Christmas, he brought up the loyalty factor to a certain extent of like, I took you out because these are the people I've been loyal to since the beginning. If we know one thing about Christmas, that's what she prides in this game. So I think there are, you know, subtle moves that are made as well to be like, okay, what are the three big facets that this one possible juror values in the game? And how can I tweak my game to make it seem like I am imbued with those virtues? And that's why you should vote for me when you get to the jury house.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he says to Christmas in his goodbye message, he says, I had three key final twos, one with Nicole, one with Enzo, and one with Memphis. And this is I tweeted this out that Christmas is going to go to the jury house and she's going to explain Cody's goodbye message. And Danny's just going to be like, well, I mean, you know, he's probably just still hiding. You know, he's obviously I was the most important final two, but
well, clearly he's keeping this a secret for everybody. He wants this to be a big surprise, like they did with America's Favorite in my original season. Like this is going to be the big shocker of the finale.
Yeah, he just knows that if he says he had a final two with me, then I would get all the credit for his game. So he needed to hide it so that he would get the credit for it. Which I get it. I understand, Cody.
Yeah, I want to see those mental gymnastics.
Though, to be fair, I don't know if Danny's giving Christmas the time of day when she gets to the jury house. Like, I think Danny has out of F's to give. And considering the way that Danny left the house with Christmas, like, I could just be imagining if she's like, we have 1 week left. Let's just be civil around each other, but we don't need to talk. And then we can go our separate ways.
Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors and we'll be right back. And we're back. So let's get back to the show. Before Christmas was evicted, she gave her speech. She said that Enzo, your congratulations on third place. And we just know that like this must have been a big moment for Enzo because we know how much he's been visualizing. Enzo, congratulations
on third place. You get a bidet, yo.
Yeah. And then Nicole just is like, hey, Cody, you know, I've been so loyal to you, so on and so forth. Cody gets up. Nicole is so nervous. Cody says, Christmas, I have to do what's best for my game. This is what's best for my game. I'm sorry. I need to evict you. He gives her a hug. He gives her the mask. And he gives her another hug. And now, I don't want to get too conspiratorial here, but if we go all the way back to the first eviction of the season, Keisha, when she left, he smells so good. He smells so good. And we talked about, like, is he using his pheromones, his smell, to mist people over? Is Cody, in giving her two hugs, is he trying to lock in that jury vote by getting her to smell him?
Almost got him taken to the final two, apparently.
Yeah, I think his superhero name should have been like Calipheromone instead of the Califury. I think that makes more sense. Could you just imagine though, Cody likes like, here's your mask, Christmas. Sniff me. Yeah. Sniff me right now.
Oh, weird.
Sniff me.
Should have rubbed it on him. He should have rubbed her mask around his body.
Hold on, you still look mad. Do you want just another hug real quick? Here's the smell.
I think he should have just been like, I don't know, maybe he should have put like some of his sweat in like her perfume or something. I'm like, oh, Christmas, put on your perfume before your big eviction speech. She's accidentally like misting herself with Cody. So she just gets seeped into the skin.
Yeah. I mean, look, all I'm saying is that if there had only been one hug, Maybe Christmas goes out. Maybe she doesn't say that everything's fine and it's just a game. Maybe she does say, you know what? I am a little bit mad. I am a little bit mad. maybe if there's no hugs, she goes out and she's like, I can't believe that guy. He's so annoying. But with two hugs, she's like, you know what? It's just a game. And he smells so nice.
Yep. She should just mask to armpits, like just straight. Yeah. Mask to armpits.
Yeah, that's, he's like, whoops, I dropped your mask. Oh no, I'm so slippery. It's rubbing all over my body. Here you go, Christmas. Put it on. Oh, it's your only mask? I'm so sorry. Have fun in the jury house.
Don't take it off.
Remember, you can't take it off for the entire 10-minute conversation with Julie Chen. That should be enough time.
Yeah. You should also probably just leave it on until the finale, just to be super safe. Just super
Karen, how
safe.
How dare you yada yada through Nicole's eviction speech when she inducted Enzo into probably one of the most exclusive clubs in Big Brother history, the I Made Nicole Pee Her Pants Club.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Ooh.
I forgot about that. I was expecting to see that segment on the episode, so I was surprised that they
A whole recap tomorrow, Taryn, that it might just come up.
Julie's like, tomorrow, you're not going to want to miss this episode.
You're not going to want to miss this episode.
I wanted to miss this episode, Julie. What are you talking about? Like, I don't want to.
You know
that.
What? I can just see it now. They're going to be sitting around the table that still hasn't shrunk, like socially distant eating their dinner. And they're going to be like, yo, Nicole, I know you always wanted to be number one, but remember when you did that number one 2 weeks ago? And then it'll flash to like that segment of now of the moment that she mentioned.
You see, I'm anticipating they're sitting around the table and then, ding dong. The doorbell's ringing. What? Nobody's allowed in here. They open the door and it's Sam's robot. Like, what? Oh, it's Sam's robot. What's going on? Is Sam here to get? We hear it's Derek's voice. Derek. Oh, no. He's here to host the recap of the recap. Uh-oh. All right. Well, now he's going to host the recap of the recap. And he goes, oh, no, no, I'm here to play. Sorry, guys. That's why we don't want to miss it.
No, yeah, maybe the surprise player will enter, but only playing virtually. I was thinking about like what will they do tomorrow, because it really does seem like we've expended all possible extraneous material. We have taken all parts of the pig and we have ground it into a hot dog that we have been devouring for the past 7 days. For Survivor fans, this is essentially the Australian Outback finale when they painted statues for an hour over the course of a week. But I did come up with an idea. BB deepfake, where they've expended moments from this season, but they haven't from past seasons. So they take Cody's face and Nicole's face and Enzo's face and put them on Dan's funeral.
Oh, man.
Put them on Bye Bye Bitches.
This is a fantastic idea.
Don't do it. Please don't. All it is, it's just going to be all of our house guests that we wish were still there. Like, I bet you Nicole, Cody, and Enzo get absolutely like no time in this recap episode.
Yeah, be like, hey, Nicole, don't you remember when you told Kristen floaters grab a light vest, 8 years ago?
Yeah. No, you know what? I think that the recap tomorrow might actually be one of the better episodes in a few weeks, because think about all of the people we're going to see in it. We're going to see Kacer. Mm. There's going to be tons of Kacer content, tons of Janelle content. We're going to see Bailey and Davon. You're probably going to watch David do something silly. Maybe talk about emotional intelligence. Who knows? Mm. Maybe IQ.
The IQ 187. Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like we could see some good stuff. I think in tomorrow's episode, maybe it won't be so bad.
Post the highlights on Twitter for me.
All right. Well, Christmas, it gets interviewed by Julie, says that her heart went out to Christmas. I did not know that this was such a one-sided rivalry between Christmas and Julie, that Julie actually loves Christmas.
Yeah, which is crazy, because Christmas was coming for her job several times over this season. Maybe Julie just feels so confident in her position that she's like, they would maybe give it to a Big Brother winner, but certainly not a Big Brother fourth placer. My job is safe now. I pity you, Christmas.
Maybe.
Oh my God. She would have said that.
Maybe that's what she was saying. She was actually addressing Christmas. She was saying, hey, Christmas, I'm sitting on the thing. I talk to the house guests, not you.
Not you.
I'm the one that holds this remote. Because, I mean, Christmas was also trying to, like, summon Julie earlier.
Exactly.
Evening, right? She was like, where are you, Julie? Just like, I'm the one in control. Yeah. Okay?
If I was the host, I would have been here by now. I'm just saying.
So just an hour-long, like, power move between Julie and Christmas, basically.
Mm-hmm. That would have been interesting if Christmas tried to use this exit interview as a job interview opportunity of being like, what do I see as my weaknesses? Well, I'm perhaps too good of a speaker. Maybe that's why she was doing it, building herself up of like, I was so good, whether it was a host or as a house guest. It's almost like I could do both things, having had the experience, Julie.
Yeah, Julie, what would you have done if you were in my position? Would you have taken Cody?
Christmas, you really, really had a case against everybody, did you?
Yeah.
She's like, I saw everything. Cody didn't give me any brand new piece of information. It was if I was standing right here where you are, holding that remote, knowing exactly what happened, giving interstitials to segments and words of wisdom as well. Yes. I was the host inside the house when you weren't, Julie Chen Moonves.
See, what Julie and Cody and none of them knew is that the ghost of Christmas Future has visited Christmas in the past. And so she did actually know everything ahead of time. She knew it all. Nothing was shocking. She wants nothing to do with Danny. Nothing was a shocker. She is the anti-shocker that she knew it all. I didn't know about the thing with Memphis, but I assumed that, I didn't know there was. I didn't know 1, 2, 3, but like I knew it all.
I knew it weeks ago.
What's the anti-shocker? Is that like the ground or like a piece of rubber?
Rubber tires.
Yeah, I was the tire. Okay, yeah. No electricity went through me.
Delusion. Convince yourself.
I think the anti-shocker is Big Brother 22.
Yeah, I think that's the subtitle of the season.
Mm-hmm. All right. Then we get family messages.
Yeah, finally. Jury members got them last week, and now I guess poor Memphis and Christmas missing out on their own messages, but the final three get their own little final words of encouragement to give them that final push.
You just know, too, we never cut back to Christmas, but she was still there when Julie said that they're going to hear from their families, and like that I guarantee she was heartbroken.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand. Again, it's tough. As a father, I can understand why it's tough to see your young child, especially. But it's also, the messages were good. I think, unfortunately, we missed out on, like, some of the more heartfelt messages, though I don't know how Memphis would react to seeing his son and probably just be like, oh, that's nice. They cut the grass. All right, moving on. Even Enzo, who has the most stake at home, in a manner of speaking, that he has, kids to take care of, he didn't necessarily have like a huge reaction, even not as much as like when he got his HOH letters.
Mike, he doesn't like to cry in front of people. Like I just don't like to cry in front of people, yo. Yeah. Like I am right now. You see these tears? You see these tears, yo? I am crying like a baby, yo.
I was like, are you crying? He's like, I am. I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, maybe if you like describe the tears, you can almost like gaslight people into like, oh yeah, I do see the tears. Like when you have like an optical illusion, like, yeah, you see that sailboat, right? Oh yeah. Yeah. I see those tears coming out of Enzo's eyes. Wow, they're really pouring out. I will say I thought it was really sweet to see Cody's girlfriend in particular, as Julie Chen calls her his better half.
Not to be offensive to you, Cody, but she is your better half. How did you like hearing from your better half? I'm kidding.
So weird.
You're both equally beautiful.
How did you like that pairing from the person who is demonstrably better than you in every facet of life?
Julie Chen.
It was a sweet moment. Cody just like immediately is in a burst into actual tears, to hear from her. That was sweet. Enzo's kids, guess what? I'm going to be a banana for Halloween. Guess what? I scored 2 goals in soccer.
I mean, I guess this is what Enzo's third HOH letter would have been, I'm assuming, is from his kids about all these updates. One of my favorite things of like the last 2 minutes of the episode these past 2 weeks is the house guests coming up with incorrect conclusions based on things. Like last week it was, no wonder he was King Kesar. That was the chess thing. It was a setup. And then this week was like, oh, he's a banana because of that veto competition you won back in week 1 in August. That's why he's a banana for Halloween.
I was literally more angry. I was like, okay, he's a banana and she's Harry Potter. Like, I was like, nobody could have got them on the same page, like a banana and apple, you know, Harry Potter, Hermione. Like, I was kind of incensed. I was like, these don't go together.
Yeah, I loved it. I read the 7th Harry Potter book.
Bring home. Just started yelling spoilers at her.
Snape.
Yeah, exactly.
You know where I'm going.
The final Horcrux, Gia. I ruined it for you, yo. I'm sorry.
I know, a whole 13 years later, right? Like.
All right. Bring home the cheese, Dad.
Bring home that cheese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because cats eat cheese.
Cats eat mice who eat cheese, so I guess there's a little bit of cheese in every mouse that you eat. So I guess, though, I don't know. Is it supposed to be like cheddar? Like cheddar
it's
is
cheddar. Yeah. It's all about that cheddar, y'all.
So
why do we
genericize it by going with cheese?
Well, I don't know. They're like 7, I guess. I don't know.
Has there been any cheese talk on the feeds? Are we looking at like another banana bread situation from Big Brother 7 where people are hinting towards sharing funds?
Rolexes, maybe.
Yeah, maybe Rolexes, actually.
Yeah. And then we hear from Victor. And he says,
"Ooh, I should remind you, she met on Big Brother 4 years ago."
Thanks,
in case
Julie.
You forgot. And Victor says, "I am very proud of you." Oh, good.
Finally.
But then he also says, "This has been the hardest thing I've ever done." She's like, "Oh, but he said it was the hardest thing he's ever done. Like, what is happening out there?" You just can't get it right.
I wrote them sponsors, though.
Yeah, I was going to say nothing in the background that indicates that. I will say, though, his hair is looking better than it has been in the past. You know, I think the worst short look that Victor had was when he got it cut right before he proposed to Nicole. When we got the flashback of her teaching him to cook in Oobly, I think that it was a little not great then, but like now it has like the swoop to it. He's got some product in it. So I'm glad they haven't lost maybe some beauty care sponsors, because he's been working on that glow up for the finale.
There you go. All right.
Actually, well, and speaking of glow up, I just want to point out here for the masses, I don't know if you all agree, but I think Memphis looked tasty at that jury.
Yeah,
segment.
He was all dressed up. He was looking great.
I'm like, no, giving I'm me over. The hard no.
I mean, he had a nice suit on, but I mean,
did he cut his hair a little bit? Maybe his hair was getting a little out of control.
Like it was, I don't know. Memphis, I will, because of the season, he will now be always grumpy old grandpa Memphis to me. That's all I see.
You just know that he was waiting to wear that suit for when he was sitting in the final two, right?
That's true. It was the final two. So now he's like, all right, I guess I better break this bad boy out. Yeah. It's not happening again.
Otherwise, it's going to be on a Zoom call. Probably.
If he's lucky.
Yeah. Julie says tune in tomorrow night. You won't want to miss it. And that's all the promo this episode has gotten tomorrow.
Yeah.
They have not talked about it at all week long. They've nothing. And until Julie says, and tomorrow night, we're going to have a special episode. You're not going to want to miss it. And then Monday, we're going to do some great stuff. I'm going to have on the pre-jurors. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. I'm like, do they not want people to watch this episode?
Yeah, I'm so confused, because I don't know. For some reason, I thought we were going to go from Friday to Wednesday for some reason that I don't know what we're doing with Monday. I guess we are now parsing out the usual talk with the pre-jurors segment in the finale to Monday, but that can clearly only be like a segment of it, right? They can't have two reunions in one week.
I think they're just going to do the pre-jury on Monday, and then they're not going to be on the finale.
So then do you think that they're going to, because typically during this recap of the recap, they usually start the first part of the final HOH. Are they going to do that on Friday, or are they going to save that for Monday?
I mean, I think they'll start it on Friday, and then they'll maybe finish it on Monday. And then, but they have 2 hours to fill on Wednesday.
And with no pre-jurors there to talk. And assumingly, you know, the more I think about it, the more it makes sense to do a separate pre-juror segment because the jurors are quarantined and bringing other people in to mingle with them is not the best idea. I could imagine that they're just like, hey, you five, fly out. You're going to do your thing on Monday, but stay home on Wednesday because you have not been in the Big Brother bubble for the past couple months. But hopefully, again, I guess they have enough to fill a whole episode on Friday. Because, I can't imagine them still having finished part one of the HOH by the end of Monday. I feel like they love to build out the entire HOH competition over the course of the finale. And now they're going to have more time to do so.
Yeah. Is it going to be 2 hours, though? What's going to happen with Amazing Race?
Race is airing from 8 to 9 and Big Brother's airing from 9 to 11.
Oh, okay. So, like, kind of like what they normally do with Survivor. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Huh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, I don't know. And the other thing as well is America's Favorite House Guest opened up, which we should probably talk about. Mm-hmm. If Janelle or, like, Kacer win America's Favorite House Guest and they're not at the finale, what happens?
Zoom call.
That's the answer for everything.
Julie Jones will be like, we'll get this in the mail to you, Janelle. It'll get to Minnesota by like Friday.
Maybe this is it, actually. Maybe they sent like film crews or whatever it is that they did to do the intros. Maybe they're going to do something similar for Monday's episode for the pre-jury where they're going to have like actual footage. And then they're only going to be on like a Zoom call for the finale. We're not really going to get to talk to them much. And that's why we get a bigger segment that is pre-planned and pre-filmed for Monday. That's actually like valid. And then they're still there to get America's Favorite Player and to maybe talk a little bit. But I think they also recognize that like these are some big, you know, Janelle Kacer, like people are going to want to hear from them. So they're not just going to want to see them on a Zoom call. So maybe that's why we're going to get the Monday segment as well.
Yeah, that could be the case. Yeah. Wring as much out of these all-stars as you can, considering that, again, some of your bigger personalities left early on, like, let's just see Janelle multiple times. I think there's a non-zero chance that's why they brought up that heinous comic clash competition is because like, well, let's just like put as these people out of like, hey, remember this person, remember this person,
remember the cast guys,
remember the pre-jurors that y'all loved,
remember when this wasn't Big Brother 16, like good, right?
They have a lot of filler they gotta do then, because that's a lot of time to fill with not that much to fill it with. Like, I'm very confused on how this is all going to work out, to be quite honest.
I just realized the final four consisted of players from Big Brother 16, Big Brother 19, and Big Brother 12. And I know that people have kind of come around on Big Brother 12 at this point, but at the time it was like the ultimate and boring seasons. We got all four of the final four from those seasons. That's
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, you're like, well, there's someone from Big Brother 10 and Big Brother 20 in the final six, and then there's the two that are voted out immediately, you know, of like, oh, okay. So representing them are, you know, these four people that played fairly close to the way they played in those first seasons that were ultimately not considered the most up and down across Big Brother history.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing, looking back at this season overall. Basically, everybody kind of played true to their original games. Like, a lot of them said they were going to go in and do different things, but then they didn't. And I would say the two people who got the closest to being different is, of course, Tyler, because, you know, he didn't try and give up in his first season. And Dani, to her detriment, where she normally, you know, is very cautious. Not cautious. Why did I say cautious? With her alliance, she normally is very quick to ditch the alliance, and she stuck in there. So it's like, it's been interesting seeing how this All-Stars season played out in a sense of individually everybody's game, as a TV product and entertainment, not so much. Not so much.
Mm. Well, what are we thinking here for America's Favorite Player? I put out a poll on the Stockwatch form for how people were going to vote. And Davon actually was in the lead. Mm-hmm. Davon with, I think something like, we'll eventually find it here. 38% of the vote, Davon okay. was, Davon oh. had the lead. Tyler in second place with 28% of the vote. And then Janelle was third place with 11% of the vote. But now this is, you know, this is the RHAP audience. This is like the right. online live feed people. Do we think that, I think it's very reasonable to say this might be our top three.
Yeah.
I'm not as confident that it's going to be in this order.
No.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing. When does voting close? Because this Monday episode, seeing a pop of Janelle and getting her back in people's eyes might boost her chances significantly of getting at least more votes than she would if she had just not and you know, only shown up for the first time since week three at the very end.
Mm-hmm. That's a good. Did they say when the voting was going to end?
Let's go to the website. That's fine.
Because I voted for Davon before we hopped on. So
already getting it in.
Which means I actually had to sign back up for CBS All Access too.
That's how they get you.
Yep. And they're like, hey, why don't you watch our feeds while you're here?
Yeah. Luckily, I've been watching, rewatching RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, no lie. After my last recap, something happened where my CBS All Access accidentally, like, I guess my PayPal, something happened anyways, and I got cut off from CBS, and I didn't realize until I went to go watch RuPaul, not Big Brother, RuPaul. And I realized, I was like, oh my God, I don't have it anymore. I was in the middle of watching season 5 and I realized it was on Hulu, and I was like, oh, I'm just going to go watch it on Hulu. And I didn't subscribe to All Access again, and I specifically just paid $6 so I can vote for Davon for America's Favorite House Guest. That's how serious I am.
Well, it looks like the vote goes up until October 27th, 2020 at 9 a.m. Pacific. Okay. So you have until noon Eastern on that right. Tuesday. So yeah, that Monday episode could be a bit of a later push. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting because, I mean, obviously I do think that Day probably has the most vocal support that I've seen, but mm-hmm. being able to have a bit of my thumb on the pulse of the casuals via the casuals corner we do sometimes on the B&B. I remember back when we last did it, which was during like the triple eviction of it all, people were not big fans of Davon, particularly the way that she had treated David. So if you look at like the last thing we remember of her versus maybe the last thing we remember of Tyler, just looking at the episodes proper, that might be something that slides in his direction. But I do agree with you, Taryn. I could honestly see a combination of these three popping up. I really don't think anyone else stands a chance. I think back in the day, there could have been a chance of Enzo possibly making these top three, but he has been thrown so far under the bus with this edit the past couple of weeks that I can't imagine anybody giving their votes to him.
I agree. I think that Janelle has a chance to make top three for sure. A pre-juror has never won America's Favorite Player, and I personally do not expect Janelle to take this one. I think it's going to be between Tyler and Davon, and I think that there's going to be a big sort of like super fan push for Davon, you know, voting every day as many times as they can. And I think the casual audience, not to say that there's not a super fan audience for Tyler. I know you're there. I've seen my mentions. But I think that there will be a bigger casual push for Tyler. It seems like that's where he has a lot of those votes. And a not insignificant portion of the super fan vote as well. And so I don't know. I kind of feel like Tyler definitely has a chance. That said, I do think Davon is getting stronger jury content than Tyler, and that may help her in the casual audience as well. So, Who knows? I think it could be close.
I'm voting for Devon. I'm going to push for Devon, but I'm going to try to do it in a way where I am not tearing any other house guest down. You know, Stan Wars, it's expected on Twitter, but like I don't want to see this again because nobody can keep it nice, you know? Right. So for me, I'm gonna vote for Devon because she's my America's favorite house guest. And that's what you will see on my Twitter promoting. I'm not here to tell you how to vote for your America's favorite house guest. I'm just letting you know what I'm going to do.
It's weird doing these for returning player seasons because we haven't had a full returning player season since the OG Big Brother All-Stars, when the fan base was not nearly the shape that it is today. And so I don't think we've really dealt with like having returning fan bases competing against one another when it comes to this type of stuff. This is new ground for the Big Brother fandom, because usually it's like, oh, these are the people I fell in love with over the course of a season. Less so, these are the people that I've loved beforehand and I still love, and therefore I will stump for them, you know, for the end of the season as well.
Yeah. Also, you know, we take this for granted, but at the start of the season, I think this would have been a gimme for Dani.
Yeah.
That she would have had this easily with Janelle out so early, with Kacer gone so early, with Nicole Anthony having been turned the way she was, with Tyler, you know, trying to quit, like everyone else, like dropping out. Even without all of that, she would have had a great chance. She was at the top of people's favorite list in the preseason on my forms. She's not even a remote possibility. She's like, she's in the bottom half of this list that I have right now. Nobody's voting for Dani this season. Quite the fall from grace. And she tried. She got Janelle out early for a reason. Some reason. Not quite.
If Janelle doesn't win AFP, is that Dani's fault then? Because she was the one that got her out so early.
Yeah, she dethroned the queen only to crown another raise one, I guess. I also like very much second that message, Mari, that this America's favorite player, but this is only a small taste of Big Brother Over the Top, what we experienced with that.
Oh yeah, I know.
But still, this is not something to attack people over. You can have fun with it. You can campaign if you want. You can do whatever. Don't attack people. If you see other people campaigning for Devon and you're a Tyler fan, just leave him alone. Let them campaign for
it's
Devon.
Really that.
You can That's campaign it. On your own for Tyler and vice versa. It's very simple. It's very easy. It should be very fun. It's no reason to be mean to people. You know what? Always live in truth and love.
Be kind.
Are we glad that she brought back, because there was missing last week, and I'm like, oh, okay, I guess this is sort of like an unceremonious sign-off for the sign-offs, but it turns out that no, she came back ripping and roaring with maybe one last little stanza to send everyone off with.
You just finale night, she's gonna have one more for us. Come on.
I think finale night, the final part of the HOH competition, are gonna be those phrases.
Oh.
And the house guests are going to say them, and they're going to be like, it's going to be what the bleep. It's going to be like, always, you know, there's power in truth and bleep. It's like, did I say love or spirituality?
I'm still waiting for her to turn to the camera and be like, have you guys been paying attention? Every second word from the phrase that I've been saying.
Yeah.
Who did I wish happy birthday to?
We'll unlock some secret treasure. Like, Julie, get out of here. What are you doing?
I've been watching too much Mole, Mari, for being like, if you paid attention, you saw the true winner of the season mole. Based on the messages that Julie put out there.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. What do we predict we're going to see in these final HOH competitions? Obviously, you know, for part three, we've been getting an actual quiz in the last couple of years. I expect that to be the same.
It's basically going to have, oh man, I'm very excited though for these jurors having to do the stupid performances of like, I don't even imagine what it's going to be this time of like filming them. I don't know, probably like on a Zoom call. being
yeah,
like
working from home.
I can't believe I'm at the beach. It's like that time I won my second veto during the OTEV, the psychedelic salamander competition. And then you have to figure out like, okay, which was this true statement and which was the false statement.
Yeah. So definitely something like that for part three. Parts one and two have been a little bit different in the last couple of years. Last year, part one was not a hanging endurance. It was not any kind of real endurance in that sense. It was an obstacle course that you had to run back and forth. Obviously, significantly different than an endurance. And then part two was more of a straight rock wall than the previous kinds of rock walls, which were more like these big walls with kind of harder questions. So that's sort of been the trend. But this season, we haven't really seen them stick to the trend that they had been doing in the past. We've seen smaller competitions, more mental, more skill-oriented competitions, less overtly athletic competitions. And I have to imagine that part of that is due to the COVID, you know, setup that they have to manage. Mm-hmm. So I would expect them to go back to their roots a little bit, at least. And so maybe we will see another endurance. We had one wall competition. We didn't get any we didn't get the spinning hangy one. We didn't get slip and slide. No eggs. Like we got there was only the one competition on the feeds. That's it, right? That's just the wall. And not that we're gonna get this on the feeds, but that leads me to believe that I think we're going to get a true endurance for part one. I think it's going to be, they're going to be hanging, or like slamming into walls or some kind of standing on a thing. I'm getting that sense.
Yeah. I do think maybe the spinning disc, cause to your point, there really haven't been any big builds, no matter what you say about the competition. And I think that also becomes from the restrictions of crew when it comes to COVID, that even the wall was just like a wall that sprayed stuff. You know, we haven't necessarily had the hey, sit on something and you get thrown into something, which tends to be a lot of these part ones. So I don't think we're getting what we got last year, which was the big Indiana Jones jungle puzzle adventure. I think it's going to be something relatively small, but endurance based. I mean, they could go pretty old school, go back to Danny's original season and do the hold on to the key for as long as possible. Could be a very easy thing to do. But I also know that Big Brother, as much as I speak out of one side of my mouth, Big Brother also loves spectacle. So I could also see them try to go after we'll do the spinning disc, but even though it's super simple, we'll try to masquerade it in this big monolithic event that's going to be less about holding on to something and more about don't get slapped by the karate master as you make it through the BB dojo.
No unicorn farts on people?
Yeah. If only. I'm pining for the days of BB19 unicorn farting glitter on people.
Well, last year that Indiana Jones style the obstacle course was very BB Can reminisce. So I mean, I would love a just the straight up hanging on the key, you know, both y'all gotta take me style of first part, you know. But I can definitely well see the disc, the spinny, the we're gonna hit you up against the wall a few times, throw some slime on you. But it's a hard call, because with the minimal builds but with all that time they have to fill, where are we looking at? So hope it, maybe it's something new. No,
I think we might get something new for part two.
That would make sense.
Yeah, because I mean, they have been, and again, this speaks towards the difference in production. We've got newer stuff from this season. We got the complete dark room competition. We got obviously the mini veto.
Stacking the mugs.
Yeah, that Dave Vaughn
one. That was
one.
Amazing.
So I'm happy they're willing to try new things. And yeah, I do hope, because I think that also means it's going to make things less predictable for us as well, right? We talked earlier in this podcast about what are Nicole and Enzo going to be like given what part two of the final HOH looks like. If it's something completely new, not only is it kind of a crapshoot for them, it's a crapshoot for us and makes the outcome that more exciting, because it's like, okay, now it really is up in the air, because this is not something that either one of them can necessarily prepare for.
Yeah.
Yep.
We can only hope. We can only hope. Well, I think that's about what we have for you. We had some fun here tonight. We had some fun.
Yes.
We did some analysis. We did some predictions. We did the whole gamut. We did it all. Any final thoughts, Mari?
I just want to thank you and Mike Bloom for getting me out of this BB rut, because I swear I'm just like, yesterday I tuned in at 8 o'clock thinking The Amazing Race is going to come on. When it didn't, I turned it off and waited till 9. So thank you guys for having me. This was fun. I can't wait till it's over. And I can't wait to talk to you guys again about something else.
All right, Mike, any final thoughts?
Yeah, we're in a weird place, right? Because it's like, this was the final proper Thursday eviction. There's been 11 of them. So it sort of is the end of an era from a certain perspective. But now I'm sort of looking on to like, well, next Thursday, there's not going to be Big Brother. And that's going to be so strange, considering like, even from June, when the idea was out there, it's been so rabidly talked about, certainly less rabid as the season has went along. Perhaps a rabies vaccine got injected into the fan base and it sort of has calmed down. But you know what? I'm excited to see how it pans out. I think we've sort of talked through tonight how the end game is going to be very interesting, and how I think even if Cody does end up winning this, I'm gonna be watching the finale primarily to see like, what does Cody do to thread this needle, especially you know, when he has such limited time in the finale. And I think it's tough to you know, engage a season or analyze a season based on it in the moment. I'm going to be very excited to, maybe not necessarily, or maybe just, I'm excited to see what they put in those final three episodes, maybe not in the watching process of them, but then to break down everything afterwards. You know, we are actually reaching the end of this season, and some of my favorite parts are sort of now looking at it as a post-mortem as to, you know, what were the key moments that happened. I think we've done a lot of dissection as to what has led the committee to dominate the way that it did. And then it continues the speculation forward of, you know, what changes should be made in the show? What are we looking forward to in Big Brother 23? So it's almost like one part of the cycle ends, then another part of the cycle begins. It's the circle of life. And I've been so happy to wander the savannah with the two of you over the past hour plus to talk about this penultimate eviction episode of Big Brother.
Well put, Mike. All right. Well, we will have an exit interview for you guys tomorrow. Rob will be sending out the questions for that, so you can look forward to that. We're also going to have some amazing race coverage. Mike, can you tell us some more about that?
Yeah, so myself and Rob and Jessica Lees got together earlier today to break down episode 2, which was fun. It's kind of a weird episode, but we had a lot of fun getting into it. Rob was there for that podcast. He will not be there for this weekend's podcast, The Tar Pits, which is sort of the Amazing Race equivalent of The Slop. It's essentially us taking together all the odds and ends of the Amazing Race week for a bonus show. So we're not going to be joined by Rob, but in his place, we'll be joined by a fantastic guest, a 2-time returning player in his own right, Corey Cool, friend of the podcast, Corey. RTB Class of 2020 member, is going to be coming on. So if you have any Amazing Race thoughts, be sure to send them our way. But yeah, we've got lots of Amazing Race content. Also have my own Exit Press with Christmas going up at parade.com. I know there's been some chatter in the chat as to how finale interviews are going to work. So I know from my perspective, I can't speak for RHAP, but there are going to be interviews being done remotely right after the finale ends. So I think if you are looking for Exit Press, look for some amalgam of them with the final three and some jury members as well coming out as soon as, you know, the night ends, late into the night on Wednesday into Thursday, as a big roundup of everything.
Yes. Yes, you can expect that. Tomorrow night, the recap of the recap with myself, Liana, and Chappelle. We'll be there.
All-star team. All-star team for an all-star season.
To recap the recap. So make sure you check. You don't want to miss that one. Of course, I will be live every morning until the end of this at 11 a.m. Eastern to update you on what happens on the Big Brother 22 live feeds. I will probably be able to tell you who won part one of the final three HOH tomorrow morning. And then the final three updates will be a overall recap of the final three and their games across the season. So tune in for that. Then Saturday nights, I've got the Legacy Watch Roundtable. And I can tell you that our good bud Ovi will be back to talk through the legacies of these players. Rob will have a Talking with T-Bird with Katie Gallagher from Palau. Which is definitely a get there.
I mean, she's also ventured her own way, speaking of production, into her own producing world. She is currently working on The Challenge as a producer. So she's had a bit of touch with reality in many ways from the TV perspective.
Here you go. We will also have a 90 Day Fiancé podcast with Puya and Sasha. We will have a Bachelorette podcast with Amy and Haley. And make sure you, if you haven't already, sign up to become a patron of Rob as a Podcast. Help support everything that we do here, and it is very much appreciated. And
especially because, so we're reaching the end of the month. I mean, I think I speak on behalf of Rob, and I would say a recommendation is if you're going to sign up to be a patron, do it at the beginning of the month, because you sort of get, you get charged at the beginning of every month as a patron, so it sort of is like getting more bang for your buck. But what I would say, if you have the means and, you know, you would like to honor RHAP for providing such, you know, sublime content at the hands of Rob and Taryn for this season and beyond, wherever the hell we are going with whatever CBS reality show is coming next, the patron community is absolutely fantastic. And you get the chance to talk with us and other reality TV obsessives, even when the shows aren't going on.
There you go. And lastly, of course, remember to vote. There is an election coming up quite soon at this point. In fact, there's a debate going on. It's probably over by now, actually. You know, remember to vote. It's very important. Don't not vote. Don't be that person.
Yeah, if you're going to vote for AFP, you better vote for in the election.
If you're voting 10 times a day for America's favorite player, make sure you at least get one of those votes sent off.
Exactly.
All right. And of course, you know, when Big Brother ends, you can stick around. We'll be here. There's going to be, you know, The Circle will come back eventually. Brent
Circle,
and I.
Circle's filming right now, I believe, actually. And I know you guys are going to cover some sequester stuff. I will put a little piece of bait here that Rob and I are working on doing a monthly Survivor show. That should be a lot of fun starting, I think, around November or so. And over on Post Show Recaps, we are humming right now because scripted TV is somehow extremely lit. So we got a lot of stuff going on over there, plus Amazing Race, and who knows, maybe Tough as Nails will come back in the spring. 2021 is going to be a weird ass time, but we are here for it.
Yeah. Big Brother may come back. Y'all see that casting, that casting commercial in the middle of the episode?
Yeah,
weird.
See it. Of course, I'm going to have some more off-season Big Brother content for you guys. I've been doing a lot of research into like why we're getting these big alliances, what we can do to fix them. So that's going to be one of the big ones when I start doing that again. And you know, you can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. I go live there all the time. I will be playing some more Among Us with Puya and the crew on Sunday. We played a bit here with Mike last Sunday.
I really was the David. I was just getting blamed for everything and getting so much voice to me. It was so much fun. Be sure to check it out. Among Us is a for like social strategy nerds like all of us. It's like a very fun game combined with the video game obsessive stuff. Like, oh, there's little flash games to do while you're also trying to evade murdering people and figuring out who the murderer was.
Yes.
Mike, why did you run past the body?
I couldn't. Not I didn't sus. See the prompt. Except with David would be like, the thing about finding a body is it takes a lot of perception to do so. I didn't find the body. I didn't find the body.
Dan Giesling played his first game of Among Us today on Twitch, and in his very first game, he died within about 5 seconds. He was killed immediately in the cafeteria, and he was just like, "What? This is exactly what you guys are like. Oh, why don't you do All Stars? This is what would have happened on All Stars, guys. They would have got out immediately. I would have found a way out of it."
I mean, Dan Gheesling does have like missed, like his miss should be subtitled like sus, because like that's essentially what he is just sus 24/7. So I think it makes a lot of sense. But
yeah,
it's a beautiful, again, talking about that full circle from when he did that troll announcement on his Twitch about him not doing Big Brother All Stars to now.
Yeah, he just immediately started blaming people and voting them out. All right, well, that's what we have for you, Mari. Where can people find you if they're interested in your social media presence?
You can find me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's two, like the number two. I'll be there. I'll be talking about Bachelorette, Amazing Race. What am I watching? Just stuff that's not Big Brother. So, yeah.
Stuff that's not Big Brother. Mike, where can people find you?
At a Mike Bloom type. Mention a lot of the podcasts that I'm doing. But yeah, if you want to check out what we're doing on postshowrecaps.com, threw some Brent Steels in there with the aforementioned Chappelle. If you're into Lost, we're doing our rewatch then too, and Star Trek as well. I am firmly in CBS's pocket for the next little while between Amazing Race, Big Brother, and the Star Trek franchises. I'm so happy to be talking about Star Trek with Jessica Lee. So if you're into all that, make sure to check it all out.
All right. And you can, of course, find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taren, and on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taren Armstrong. I'm working my way through Voyager right now. That's where I'm at.
Voyager, yeah. I admittedly have not seen Voyager. I've seen ounces of Voyager. I'm in the middle of DS9 right now, but I'm going to Voyager next. Since Seven of Nine has now become like a fixture in Star Trek Picard, I need to learn myself a bunch about Voyager.
DS9 was my favorite, and I'm actually really enjoying Voyager.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a hot take.
I don't know. I think Voyager is definitively like they were at the time very much trying to go back to like the TNG of it all. I think it takes a little while for it to find itself from what I hear.
Yeah,
but I've heard some good things. And it seems like the cast seems interesting. You know, Kate Mulgrew is going to be making her own return to Star Trek. So I think you have perfect timing here, Taren, that Captain Janeway is in the conversation once more.
I think she's my favorite so far of the captains.
Wow.
I like her a lot. All right. This is not a Star Trek podcast. Thank you guys so much. Thank you guys so much.
It's an all Star Wars podcast.
For joining us, and we will see you next time.